I'm Saruti.
And I'm Hannah, for the last time in 2021.
Yes, this is, as Hannah has given away...
Sorry, stealing your thunder there, sorry.
...final episode of Red Handed for 2021. What a year it's been.
What a year. What a dish, what a dollar, as Megara says in Hercules. We said it all last week.
We did. Yeah. We're recording these back to back. It's mega Casey day at Red Handed HQ today.
Saru and I just went to go grab some lunch and actually spoke to each other for the first time in about 2 weeks.
I was like, oh, hello, you. How are things? What's going on with you? Those very important life things. I'm just like, you just come into the office and I just like look up, grunt at each other and then get back to work. So no, today has been a double Casey day, which is why we kind of said everything we wanted to say at the top of last week's episode.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for being here, being loyal, being listeners, being lovely. We love you.
We most certainly do. And because we love you, we are not going to leave you hanging. So when we left you last week and where we left Casey was she was in custody, having been arrested in connection to the disappearance of her daughter, three-year-old Kaylee. Even after the arrest, and by this stage, months of scrutiny and time in jail, Casey was sticking to her nonsensical story of Zanny the Nanny having stolen her child. And we've got a police interview for you where Casey gives a detailed history for Zenaida Fernandez-Gonzalez, the lady she claims is her permanent private nanny. Zenaida Fernandez-Gonzalez, Zanny the Nanny, doesn't exist.
Just a reminder in case anyone forgot.
She never existed.
So let's have a little listen, shall we?
Yeah.
If we find that out, that people are going to look at you a wrong way?
No, sir.
And you're telling me that Zenaida took your child without your permission and hasn't returned her?
The last person that I've seen with my daughter, yes.
Is she Puerto Rican? Is she Dominican? Is she white?
She's mixed. She's black and Puerto Rican.
Is there any underlying cause to why Zenaida would have taken your child?
Nothing that...
She ever make any statements to you about...
Only how much she loves Kaylee and how great of a kid she is.
And when you talk to Jeffrey afterwards, I'm assuming that Jeffrey's child is still with him?
His child is still with him.
You said Zenaida had family up in New England, up in New York or
yes,
something?
Yes, she has family down south, her mother, her sister... her brother's in New York. She's originally from New York. Pretty much grew up there, moved down here, went to the University of Florida.
New York is quite famously not in the South.
Well, she has family down South. Her mother and her sister live there, but her brother's in New York, and she's originally from New York, but she went to Union,
just the
Florida.
Rate of making it up is great. She doesn't skip a beat.
No, she's black. She's half black. She's half Puerto Rican. Yeah, what's next? What's next? You want a family history? Sure. What?
Here's their Ancestry.com profile.
Yeah. Mate, God, it is. It's unbelievable. Again, just in case anyone's forgotten, Zenaida doesn't fucking exist. But the police obviously don't know this yet. They don't know that Zenaida doesn't exist. And they have to, whatever they might think, they have to follow up on Casey's story. They have to look for this person, right? And interestingly, they did actually find a Zenaida Gonzalez living about 20 miles south of Orlando in the town of Kissimmee.
It's Kissimmee. And do you know why I know that?
Oh, I was listening to an American say it and he said Kissimmee. Anyway, Kissimmee. What did he say? Anyway, whatever. That place. Sorry.
That's where my mum's houses are in Florida.
Oh,
so I have spent 7 Christmases.
How do I say it?
We've always said Kissimmee. And that's what the agency say.
Okay. It never comes up again.
It's, there's fuck all. Honestly, it's like, it's closer to Tampa than it is to Orlando. And Tampa is... Tampa.
I have
full stop.
No concept of what's happening. But yes, so they find a woman named Zenaida Gonzalez living in this town. Again, like I said, 20 miles south of Orlando. So very close, very close. But this woman, she was middle-aged, not 25, like Casey had said about her nanny.
Really good Walmart.
Oh, really? Well,
I mean,
surprised.
I've never been in a Walmart I didn't like.
I don't think I've ever been in a Walmart.
It's like Costco, but crazy.
I've been in a Target. I have been in a Target.
I've been in a Target with you. You had a bad time.
Oh, it's very much. It's very much too much. This woman, Zenaida, when the police went and interviewed her, she denied knowing Casey, Kaylee, or anyone connected with the Antonys at all. And the police quickly released this Zenaida after it became clear to them that she had nothing to do with anything. And maybe you're thinking, well, you know, that's only one Zenaida Gonzalez that they found. Maybe they should have kept looking. They only ruled this person out. Well, apparently... There were only around 200 women in the whole of the United States at the time with the name Zenaida Gonzalez. That's a nation of 330 million people.
She shot herself in the foot a bit with the name Zenaida.
This is the thing, is like, do you go Susan Smith or do you go Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez? I think given how rare a name it was as a combo name, the fact that the police found anyone with that name living nearby was frankly unbelievable. You know, again, some people might be like, how did they rule this woman out that easily? She was only 20 miles away. She's got the right name. Well, Casey Anthony couldn't pick her out of a lineup. So she's probably not a fucking nanny, right? I'm going to guess. And then whenever they confront her with the fact that they can't find anyone by this name, she's like, they're not searching the full name. They're only searching Zenaida Gonzalez. She goes by sometimes Zenaida Fernandez, sometimes Zenaida Gonzalez, sometimes all three names. And they're just not looking for her properly, is Casey's argument all the time. You couldn't make it up. So yeah, like I said, the fact that they found anyone by this name at all nearby was frankly unbelievable given those statistics. And now I know that we've already revealed to you the fact several times that there is no Zanny the Nanny. But if you think that is the end of the intrigue surrounding the name Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez, then you would be incorrect. But we're going to put a pin in it for now and come back to it later on this episode, because it's even weirder than you think.
What we need to focus on now is that the police by this stage were completely convinced that Casey not only had something to do with the disappearance of her daughter, they were convinced that Casey Anthony had killed her daughter, Kaylee.
Yeah, they've got the banding in the hair, they've got the smell, they're convinced that Kaylee is dead and that if she's dead, that Casey's the one that did it.
And the people of Florida felt pretty much the same way. Every single night, Nancy Grace was hitting the screens across the state screaming, "Tart Mom!"
Yep. This was her, like, catchphrase. This was her nickname for Casey Anthony. I don't get it.
I don't know.
Every mom is a top mom.
Yeah, don't know. Maybe it stands for something.
Maybe, I don't know.
Too old to mom. I don't know. Sorry, Nancy Grace, you've lost me. You lost me a long time ago, to be honest.
She's out in full force on the Casey Anthony case. Oh, I can imagine. We'll come back to her later. But yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
And since public record laws in Florida are very, very open under the Sunshine Act, it means that the public and the media are given access to all 911 calls, all interviews, all videos from prison visits that pertained to even the tiniest corner of Casey Anthony's case. And obviously, when people saw these, they freaked out and protesters actually began turning up outside the Anthony home every day. If you're even cursorily aware of this case, you will have seen the videos of this. They're very easy to find. It's full of very weird scenes of people going on banging on the Anthony's family home, screaming at them, physically fighting with lovely George. It's madness.
It really is. There's no other word for it. I'm just like, whatever your opinion is of what's happened, even if you think that the Antonys, like as in George and Cindy, are involved, why you would take it upon yourself to turn up at their house and scream at them? I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It's super common. I can't get into the mind of those people.
No, but it's a vigilante justice thing, sort of quasi-vigilante justice. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
How do I make this about me?
Yeah, 100%.
If I'm the one that knocks lovely George out, then I've helped.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's fucking terrifying. So in the meantime, while all this is going down, the police, believing that they had enough evidence from what they had found in the car, given the hair and the stain, etc., and believing that they had sufficient probable cause, charged Casey Anthony with murder in October 2008. 2 months after her initial arrest. By this stage, Casey had engaged the services of a then little-known defense attorney named Jose Baez. Jose Baez is going to become another key addition to our cast of crazy characters.
A major player
in this. So Baez, how can I describe him? He's like a smarmy bulldog. He's good at what he does.
Right.
And if I ever get charged with murder, I would like you to call Jose Baez.
Okay, done.
Right. I hate him, but he's very good at his job.
Okay.
So as soon as Jose Baez took over as Casey Anthony's lawyer, he began severely restricting her communication with investigators. Because up until this point, we could just make a 10-part series of us playing clips of Casey Anthony and being interviewed by the police. She just talks them constantly. She says nothing, but she constantly talks to them and incriminates herself. Jose Baez puts a stop to that. And the police knew, despite everything they thought they had on Casey, if they were going to get anywhere with this case, especially on a murder conviction, they needed a body.
And enter my favourite name of 2021. On the 11th of December 2008, a city maintenance worker named Roy Kronk, wrong lever, Kronk, pulled, not a lever, but he pulled over onto the side of the road. and headed into the woods to relieve himself. Naughty Kronk. And that was when he spotted scattered bones lying in the undergrowth. Police could hardly believe it. The location was less than a quarter of a mile from the Anthony's home. I am more familiar with this particular area of Florida than I would like to admit. I have spent a lot of time there. And when they're saying woods, they mean jungle. Like, it is so dense. Like, you literally cannot see more than 2 feet. Like, it's the trees start and they don't stop.
They flip-flop between the terms woods and swamp.
Yeah, it's I can see it in my mind's eye. Mm. It's not somewhere you want to be. You just do not go in there, especially if you are me. So, this wood, swamp, jungle forest was literally down the road. And basically, the first spot, if you left the Anthony's place, where there were no houses. This discovery spot also becomes very interesting later on, but just like with Zenaida Gonzalez's name, we're going to leave it on the pin cushion. When forensics teams arrived, alerted by Roy Kronk, they were led by the chief medical examiner, Dr. Jan Garavaglia, or, as she's known on her hit TV show, Dr. G. The remains were totally skeletonized and spread over an area of a few feet in the swampy jungle forest trees. It appeared to Dr. G that at one point the body had been inside two plastic bin bags and a large canvas bag. The remains had clearly been disturbed by animals, and the body also seemed to have been, at one stage, wrapped in a Winnie the Pooh baby blanket that was also found at the scene.
That bit just makes me so fucking sad.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's just so sad. So a week after the discovery of the body, Dr. G confirmed in a press conference that the remains were indeed those of Kaylee Anthony. She also stated that the means of death, in her opinion, her professional opinion, she was ruling it a homicide. Dr. G admits in interviews that given the state of the remains, because remember, it's just bone, it's just dry bone. Mm-hmm. It's 6 months after Kaylee went missing. We know no one saw her after she went missing. I think it's safe to say she died as soon as she went missing.
Yeah.
So she's been dead for 6 months. Because of the state of the remains, there wasn't much that Dr. G could do in terms of toxicology tests or identifying some sort of real cause of death. The bones showed no physical trauma, and there was no soft tissue left to examine. She stated that she had ruled it a homicide given the other surrounding circumstantial evidence, which a lot of people like criticize, but that is literally the job of the medical officer, like the chief medical officer's job. Or the coroner here, is to look at the other circumstances, the way in which the body is discovered, where the body is discovered, all of these things, and to come to a conclusion that they think is the most reasonable conclusion. It's not her job to be like, well, I don't know, I've just got a bunch of bones. What are you looking at me for? So she doesn't like overstep the mark. She rules it a homicide based on what she sees. And she says that the key pieces of evidence for the homicide theory were how well hidden the body seemed and, crucially, the discovery of 3 pieces of duct tape stuck to Kaylee's skull. The duct tape was found attached to her mandible or lower jaw, and Dr. G theorized that the duct tape was the murder weapon and that the cause of death had most likely been suffocation. According to Dr. G, the duct tape must have been on Kaylee's face when she died because the mandible was still attached to the rest of the skull. Normally, when decomposition starts, the lower jaw falls off pretty quickly because it's not attached by bone.
Oh, I don't like thinking about that.
Yeah, but it makes sense, doesn't it? If the mandible's still there, it wasn't put on afterwards,
or
it didn't just end up stuck there afterwards. It must have been there before the decomposition process started.
So what is holding it there? Like ligaments?
Yeah, like ligaments. Ligaments and muscle.
I saw a really horrible tweet the other day that's going to make you feel really uncomfortable, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Excellent. I'm so glad I just ate.
It was like one of those threads of like, what makes you feel the most uncomfortable? And one person tweeted that your bones are wet all the time. They're wet all the time.
Stop it.
You're welcome.
I'm leaving.
Dr. G was also surprised to find that all of Kaylee's teeth were still in place. Typically, with the remains of children that young, the baby teeth, since they don't have roots, fall out by that stage of decomposition. The duct tape having been wrapped around Kaylee's face at the time of death, or very shortly after her death, so pre-decomposition, would have been the only way to explain the mandible and the baby teeth still being in place. It seemed like there could be no explanation for why someone would tape up the face of a child that was already dead. So it makes sense to theorize that the tape was therefore used to kill, not as anything to do with body disposal or something after the fact.
This is the thing. Basically, people will argue that the tape was just found at the scene of the crime and it got stuck to the skull because the skull gets tossed about by animals.
Oh, yeah, there's fuckloads of animals in those woods.
Yeah, so some people will say, well, how do you know that the tape just wasn't in the woods and when a fox or whatever? I don't know.
You wish. You wish it was foxes, my friend.
Whatever, a fucking alligator came and, like, tossed this skull about. How do you know that the skull didn't fall on the duct tape and that's when it got stuck to it?
Yeah.
And Dr. G's point is it must have been there pre-decomposition, so at the point or shortly after death, for the mandible and the teeth to still be in place.
Right.
So that is her evidence for why she is saying, or that's her reasoning for why she is saying that the duct tape was the murder weapon, because it's over the mouth and the nose.
Dr. G also pointed the finger at Casey Anthony being the killer, and she did that by strongly suggesting that a stranger murder seemed highly unlikely. For example, the Winnie the Pooh blanket that was found at the body discovery site matched the theme of Kaylee's bedroom. The canvas laundry bag, the one found at the scene which it was assumed that Kaylee was kept in, was sold in pairs from a local store, and the other half of that pair was found in the Anthony house. The duct tape also matched the type found at the Anthony residence, so they're not trying particularly hard.
And this is the thing, if you're saying she was kidnapped by somebody else somewhere outside of my house, again, none of this is like smoking gun, but it's pointing more and more at the fact that this happened inside the Anthony household.
So following these findings, Casey was charged with first-degree murder, and she spent the next 2 years in county jail awaiting trial.
And it was the trial that everyone was waiting for. It would be the trial of the century, as the papers reported. People were queuing up round the fucking block, like, all night, like, camping out to get tickets to get inside. I don't even... Tickets, is that the right word? To get in.
Tickets.
Just some guy, like, selling tickets on the side, like, touting these fake tickets. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy, like, watching the people queue up. And also, fun fact, 40 million people watched it on TV.
Wow.
The population of the UK is, like, 66 million. That is crazy.
Yeah, that's fucking
three bonkers. Quarters of the population of the UK watched the Casey Anthony trial. And as you would expect with such a high-stakes case, the difficulties started straight away. The defence argued that there was no way that Casey could get a fair trial in Orlando. Everyone in the area had already decided her guilt. It was far too emotional. And there was no way that a jury picked from there would be impartial. So the judge decided... And I've never seen this before. Maybe it's more common, but I don't know. The way that it's kind of spoken about makes it seem like it's kind of a weird move. Instead of moving the trial somewhere else, the judge decided to bring a jury in from out of town.
Oh.
From, I think it's Pinellas County?
Hmm.
Let's go with that. From Pinellas County, Florida, to be exact, which is over 100 miles away from Orlando. So again, I think it's worth mentioning because 100 miles is not an insignificant distance. I don't know that people 100 miles away haven't heard about this case or watched everything just in the same way people in Orlando have. But also, what you're then saying is, these people can't even go home that night after jury duty.
No, no.
They're now living there as long as this first-degree murder trial takes.
Yeah, so all they have to do is turn on the TV.
And also, what I'm saying is, like, that's another level of stress that you're adding to an imported jury.
Yes, true, yeah.
And this is actually really funny. In some of the documentaries, there were, for all the people that wanted to get into the trial, there were some jurors that were like, I'm not fucking doing this because I don't want to be involved in this. I don't want to go live 100 miles away from my house. So there's this one guy that gets interviewed and he's like, I didn't want to do it. So I just started talking about it. And then they were like, you're getting fined in contempt of court and you're chucked off the jury. And he paid, I think it was like $4,000. He paid in fine. And they actually said to him, did you do this on purpose because you didn't want to do it? And he was like, yeah. And then he went home.
I wouldn't want to do it.
No. Even with this jury situation, as we've outlined it, the fact that these jurors are being imported in, they're probably very unhappy about this, given the fact that most people know about this case. The prosecution, I think, still thought that this case was going to be a slam dunk. But they had no idea what they were up against with the dream team that was Jose Baez and Casey Anthony.
In court, Casey, this is the oldest trick in the fucking book, turned up dressed very conservatively, hair up, no makeup, looking very plain. This image was clearly to contrast what she knew would be coming first right out the gates from the prosecution. The jury were shown a string of photos and videos from the time that Kaylee was missing. They were all of Casey Anthony out at bars and clubs and seemingly having the time of her life. These images, which you can find very easily, Casey is wearing very little. She's grinding about and looking pretty smashed. And apparently, during the month when she thought that Kaylee had been abducted by her nanny, Casey even took part in a hot bod contest.
Probably at That's So Dope Fridays, or whatever the fuck it was called.
Tony Lazzaro, her now ex-boyfriend and club promoter behind the nights out that Casey was pictured at, testified that Casey had seemed absolutely fine during the month. She never cried. She never said that Kaylee was missing. She'd never been unhappy. The prosecution also played the court CCTV that showed at 7:45 p.m. on the day that she claimed Kaylee had vanished, Casey was with Tony in a Blockbuster, casually just choosing films.
And that's the night that she says she tried to go pick Kaylee up and there was no one at the house.
Blockbuster does it again.
I'm so sad.
It's such a societal loss.
Yeah, I can't tell you why, Tony. And I won't tell you why until I'm eventually arrested for this fact. But I really feel like what I need to do is go to a Blockbusters with you just to take my mind off some things that I can't talk about. It's fucking ridiculous. So you can understand with shit like this and how much Casey lied that the prosecution think it's an open and shut case. But I really do get frustrated with them because I feel like, as good as Jose Baez is, I feel like the prosecution really dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
During this fateful month when Kaylee was missing, Casey also decided to get herself a tattoo on her shoulder that read Bella Vita. Just in case your Italian isn't totally brushed up, Bella Vita translates to beautiful life. She's such a fucking twat. So the prosecution actually managed to track down the tattoo artist who gave her this beautiful artwork. And this tattoo artist testified in court that while Casey was getting the tattoo, remember, during the month that her child is missing, apparently all she talked about during that tattoo session was her boyfriend Tony.
Yikes.
It's like, and I feel like this is quite obvious when you listen to Casey speaking, it's like a 16-year-old. It's like she's not 22. Oh, yeah. She's very arrested in mm-hmm, her development, mm-hmm. Very, very immature. And prosecution also found an old friend of Casey's, a woman named Kio Marie Cruz, who told the court that apparently Casey had never wanted Kaylee. She said that she'd wanted to give the baby up for adoption, but that Cindy had forbidden it and made Casey keep the baby. And the prosecution also had a diary entry from Casey's journal. This diary entry was dated the 21st of June, which would have been just 5 days after Kaylee was last seen, and probably 5 days after Kaylee was last alive. The diary entry read, quote, "I have no regrets, just a little worried. I just want for everything to work out okay. I completely trust my own judgment, and I know that I made the right decision. I just hope that the ends justify the means. This is the happiest I've been for a very long time. I just hope my happiness continues to grow." Pretty suspect, right?
Yep.
Problem is, the year wasn't noted. So that could have been the 21st of June any year, and she could be talking about literally anything. And Jose Baez obviously used that piece of information to tear through this evidence like a piece of wet toilet paper. My frustration, again, with the prosecution here is, you didn't just find scraps of paper. It was in a diary. Could you not tell from other things she's talking about, and they're probably like fucking Tony, what year it was from?
Yes, that's extremely true. I think that's one of those things you can't take without the context.
Yeah. So I feel like they're probably right that this wasn't 2008, because otherwise it would have been. We know if there's one thing that Casey Anthony talks about, it's Tony. And if it's no mention of Tony in this diary or on the pages next to this entry, then it's not 2008. So don't fucking bring it up in court because you're going to get torn apart. And it's going to look really bad.
Yeah. And she's only 22. Like, how many diaries can there really be? I went to school today and drew a picture of a horse. Okay, it's not that one. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Again, this is my frustration at the prosecution. I'm like, leave it. Leave it out if you can't back it up, because Jose Baez is going to tear you apart and it's going to make the jury be like, oh.
All of the evidence is pretty circumstantial, but circumstantial evidence is evidence. But unfortunately, for a first-degree murder charge, the prosecution needed a little bit more than that. Which brings us very neatly onto the forensic evidence. The prosecution's case was this. Kaylee had died some sort of asphyxial-type death, probably involving drugs. So they're saying that Casey had administered the drugs, and then once Kaylee was passed out, Casey had taped her daughter's mouth and nose shut with three pieces of duct tape, and then Kaylee had died. and the drug that the prosecution settled on was chloroform. And this was because when expert in human decomposition Dr. Arpad Vass tested the gases from the carpet in the boot of the car, he found very high levels of chloroform. He actually said, and this is a quote, "It was shockingly high, the highest levels I've ever seen in my 20-year career."
But the defence hit back at the chloroform and said the chloroform is also present in many cleaning products and that it could simply have been there because of that. Also, the way in which Dr. Arpad Vass does his analysis hadn't been really used in court before, so it was very easy for Jose Baez to be like, where's the evidence for this? Like, where's the precedent for this? Like, we haven't seen this before. His favourite thing Baez to do is to undermine the scientific capabilities of every expert put in front of him. He also goes after Arpad Vass, who is not like some random guy they pulled off the street. He worked at like that body farm and stuff. Like, he's the real deal. But he's just like, what's your actual like field of expertise? And Dr. Arpad Vass was actually an anthropologist, but he had taught himself chemistry and come up with these experiments himself on how to do this. So Jose Baez just tears him apart. I'm not saying it's not true, but again, the prosecution kind of leave themselves open to this. And also the other thing was that toxicology on Kaylee's bones also showed no signs of chloroform, which the prosecution obviously made a big deal about. However, chloroform in the body disappears after just a day or two. And so finding chloroform in soft tissue after a few days would have been hard enough, let alone finding it in dry bones after 6 months. But the problem is, this point was never made clear to the jury. Baez just says it, and then it really frustrates me because in all the documentaries, they're like, we never got a chance to rebut that. And I'm like, what do you mean you never got a chance to rebut that? I don't understand.
I don't think I know enough about how the American justice system works to like make that call, but can't they cross-examine? Like, surely.
I don't know. But this is the thing you need to know, is that Baez makes these claims that, yeah, all right, you found chloroform. Chloroform's in cleaning products. You already said that somebody had tried to clean out the boot and you didn't find any in her bones. Can't find it in the bones, but nobody hears that bit. The jury don't hear that bit. And I don't know, perhaps the state thought that their other finding would be proof enough of their chloroform theory. Because Google searches had been found on the Anthony's household computer on chloroform. And apparently, someone had searched for chloroform online a whopping 84 times on that computer.
And not just chloroform, how to make it.
This is the thing. Some places it says how to make it, some places it says chloroform. It's something like that. But the word chloroform is searched for, right. And they're also saying it was done 84 times.
But once again, Cindy Anthony, enabling mom of the year, swings in to save the day. Cindy took the stand and stated that she had been the one to search for chloroform. Apparently, the Anthony's dog had been eating some bamboo leaves in the back garden and getting a little bit sick. So Cindy had Googled chlorophyll, and Google had showed her suggestions that included chloroform. And out of pure curiosity, the nurse clicked on it. Cindy was adamant, though. She'd only searched for chloroform the once.
In an aha moment, the prosecution questioned Cindy on how she could have been the one at home Googling chloroform when her logins and time cards at work showed that she had been there at the time and not at home. Cindy said she didn't know, but it was definitely her at home.
You can't answer that one, officer. But it was just so you know. Yeah. The important thing is, it was definitely me.
It was definitely me.
Even though literally all of the hard evidence points to the contrary, I can promise you, me, the trustworthy Cindy Anthony, can say that I definitely was at home and not at work.
Precisely. But then it was the defense's turn for an aha moment. Because apparently, the software that the prosecution had used to check the number of times that chloroform had been searched had a glitch. And instead of 84 times, as the state had said, chloroform had actually only been searched for once from the Anthony computer. And some people say, oh, look, that's consistent with what Cindy said. Because Cindy stuck to her guns on the stand. She said, I only did it once. I did not search 84 times. I was searching for chlorophyll, saw chloroform, clicked on it one time. And people make a big deal about that. But I'm not saying it wasn't Cindy. But obviously Jose Baez had the information that there was a glitch with the software and it had only been searched for once.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously he would have told Cindy, you go up there, you tell them it was you, and say it was only searched for once, and then I'll come out and say, and we know it was only searched for once. She goes out there and says, yeah, I searched for chloroform 84 times by accident. Yeah, then he can't use this evidence about the glitch.
Yeah.
He obviously would have fucking told her. In any case, all of this really, really hurt the prosecution.
Byers also just dismissed the hairs that had been found in the boot, saying that the kind of DNA the state had, so mitochondrial only, couldn't even definitively prove whose hair it was. And then he just sort of shrugged off the banding that we discussed in last week's episode. This again undermined the state's way of showing that Kaylee's dead body had been in the back of Casey's car at one point. Byers really, really goes after Dr. G, even going so far as to claim that her methods were unscientific. Said the lawyer to the scientific doctor. In court footage, the judge even looks a bit confused, but everyone just sort of lets it happen.
This is the thing, when he's saying, making these accusations at Dr. G and at Dr. Arpad Vass, you can see the judge in the background like being like, what? Like he looks like, state, are you gonna, you know, do something about it? Like, it's just shocking. It's shocking. And then the defense, Jose Byers, brings out the big guns. He brings out Dr. Werner Spitz. And that name probably sounds familiar to many of you true crime fans out there, because Dr. Spitz was and is a highly recognizable and respected medical examiner, having been involved in cases like the O.J. Simpson trial and the JFK assassination.
It doesn't get much bigger than that.
Not really, and it doesn't get much bigger than Dr. Werner Spitz in this world.
No, unless it's Nuremberg. Yeah. Because there isn't any bigger criminal arena he could be in.
No. And Spitz actually did a second autopsy on Kaylee's remains. And he refuted Dr. G's duct tape theory, which was, after all, the main element that the prosecution could point to say that the death was a homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Without the duct tape, there's no way of proving it was murder. Obviously, apart from the fact that the body was fucking hidden inside three bags in the fucking swamp woods.
Mm-hmm.
Spitz pointed out that his reasoning for saying that the duct tape wasn't valid evidence was that there was no DNA on the duct tape to prove that it had ever been over Kaylee's mouth. Remember, Dr. G was saying that it had been over Kaylee's mouth because of the mandible and the lower teeth still being there. He said, like many other people, that it could have just been in the swamp and got stuck to the skull when it had been tossed about by animals. The prosecution hit back that the tape had been in 90 degree heat. That's Fahrenheit. In Celsius, that's 32 degrees.
It's hot. Humid as shit.
Oh, yeah. It's in a fucking swamp. And, like, the body had been submerged underwater for various points because, like, the water level had dropped and risen in that area so many times during the 6 months it had laid there. So, yeah, they say obviously there'd be no DNA left to find. It was out exposed for so long. But remember, and this is the key thing that Byers just loves to fucking say, the defense don't have to prove anything. They just have to poke enough holes in the prosecution's story to introduce beyond reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does very well. He proves nothing. He's just there with a stick.
Just poking.
Poking.
And speaking of sticks, Byers also brought up the main man, my favourite, who had found Kaylee's remains, the glamorous Roy Kronk. Roy, when he had found the remains, had made a huge mistake.
Yeah. Learn from Roy. Don't be Roy. What we're about to tell you next, if you are in this situation, don't do it. Don't do this.
Because Kronkers had picked up a stick and put it in the skull's eye hole and lifted it up. So that means he's contaminated the crime scene. And Byers made the case that because of this, all of the forensic evidence that the prosecution had presented was completely out of the window. Which I think, when you consider how long the body has been exposed, I really don't think you can put that on Kronk's shoulders.
No.
His broad shoulders.
But he does testify in court and he says, I knew it was a skull. He knew it was a skull. He wasn't like, it's a rock and let me poke it. He was like, I knew it was a skull and I shouldn't have picked it up. My bad.
Kronk.
Like, don't do that. If you find a fucking skull in the woods, don't do it. Call the police. Go do that instead. Because this case could be made. You could be made to say you contaminated, you did whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's fair or right. And this didn't actually happen. The forensic evidence wasn't thrown out. But Byers, again, was able to just poke another little hole and say, how secure is what we're even looking at? That duct tape, maybe it was stuck to fucking Roy Kronk's boot and he stomped in there and got it stuck to the face. You just don't know.
So let's leave the forensics in Kronk's completely incapable hands and move on to the easily provable lies that Casey had told police throughout the process. And these were, of course, the front and centre of the prosecution's case against her, and so much of it was so incredibly damning. And even though Baez brought in dozens of Casey's friends, who all said that Casey was a great mum, they all had to admit that Casey had seemed fine during the month that Kaylee was missing, and she hadn't told a single one of them that she had been taken.
So Jose Baez had to find a way to explain all of the lies and odd behaviour that had come from his client. Like, why did she not tell anyone as soon as Kaylee disappeared? Why did she lie about everything from working at Universal Studios to all of the made-up people? Why did she not call the police for 31 days after Kaylee supposedly vanished? And to counter the sheer weirdness of it all, Baez was going to have to go hard and create an equally shocking reason to counter Casey's actions. And yeah, fucking hell did he drop an atomic bomb on proceedings.
Here's what he did. Baez told the court that Kaylee had never even been missing, but that she had in fact died on the 16th of June, 2008, in the family home. According to this new statement, the 3-year-old Kaylee had got into the garden and someone had left the stairs down to the above-ground pool. Kaylee, who loved to swim, got into the pool and, tragically, she drowned. Apparently, when Casey had woken up, she found Kaylee missing, and she and George searched everywhere. Eventually, it had been George who found Kaylee's lifeless body in the water. George screamed at Casey that she was going to go to jail for the rest of her life and that Cindy would never forgive her. Baez continued that Casey begged her father for help, and finally he agreed to help her and hide the body for Cindy's sake. So George took Kaylee's body, wrapped it up, and told Casey he'd handle it. Then apparently, former police officer George Anthony took his beloved granddaughter's body and dumped it in the woods a quarter of a mile from his own front door, wrapped up in very recognisable things from his own house.
Yep.
George, leave George out of it.
Oh, we get so much.
I know, I've read it.
So, the pool theory was Baez's way to explain what had happened to Kaylee. Since the Zanny the Nanny stuff was so obviously a non-starter, and they had found Kaylee's body a quarter of a mile from the house, he had to find some way to explain what had happened to Kaylee. And since no physical evidence was present to explain a real cause of death, because remember, there's no soft tissue, no trauma to the bones, drowning could have been plausible. Baez, however, when he offers up this theory in court, offers not one shred of evidence for the drowning story. In fact, he finds a weird way, and I haven't put this in the notes because it felt, my brain was melting, but I'll tell you about it. It's talked about quite at length in one of the documentaries. He finds a way to blame Dr. G for the fact that he has no evidence for the fact that Kaylee Anthony drowned.
Is this like a Piers Morgan, Meghan Markle situation where maybe Dr. G just once didn't text Baez back and now his entire career is based around bringing her down and just talking smack?
Oh, mate. Baez is, like I said, he wasn't really well known when this case happened, but he got to be Casey Anthony's defense lawyer. If I can get her off, I'm it. Mm-hmm. I am it forever. I will hire him. This was his case to make his career. The way he blamed Dr. G for the fact that he didn't have any evidence of the drowning was he said that a way that you could tell about drowning is checking for diatoms in the body of a victim. Diatoms are like single-cell algae that live in water, but they also live like elsewhere, just like in fucking mud and shit. And he said that if you had tested her body for diatoms, we could have told whether she had drowned. This is absolutely fucking nonsensical. You test for diatoms in the liver or in the bone marrow. They just got bone. They just got dry bone. And also, diatoms can come from anywhere, like I said. And also, for you to test for diatoms, you would also need a sample of the water to test against that.
Right.
By this point, it's been 2.5 years, because the trial takes place 2 years later. But it had been 6 months since after Kaylee had died when her bones were found. So where are you getting the sample of pool water that's not been refreshed for almost 3 years? And even if they had found the diatoms, even if you'd found liver and tested it against a sample and found a match, we already know she fucking swam in that pool anyway. She could have swallowed it. And that's how it could have got into her body. Again, I feel like the jury are not told this part. They're just told, well, we could have had it, but we don't because you didn't test for diatoms. She drowned. I rest my case. It's remarkable.
Wow.
So yeah, he offers no shred of evidence for this drowning story. But obviously, this plot line hit everyone in court like a ton of bricks. It was completely unbelievable. And I honestly think that it was all the more shocking because Baez was the one saying it all. And in the court footage, of which there are hours and hours and hours and hours on YouTube that you can watch, Casey just sits there, staring, silently. She does this thing where her eyes are constantly darting. It's like she's like, between this person, she's like watching Baez and she's like, how are they taking it? How is this coming across? She's a mega blank face as well. She has like the blankest expression in court the entire time.
Ah, blank face, son of blank face.
Absolutely, completely blank face. Rarely shows any emotion in court. Again, I know that's not particularly indicative of something, but you have to look at this case like with everything together. The worst part, there's so many bad parts. One of the worst parts is when Jeff Hopkins, everybody remember him from last week's episode, he comes to court and he's like, I don't know her. We didn't even work together. Yeah. And I don't know who Zenaida Gonzalez is. I don't have a nanny. I don't even have any children. And Casey Anthony's just sat there with a blank face. I would have died of embarrassment.
Oh my God.
She just sits there. She's like.
She doesn't have the embarrassment gene, no, I don't think.
She, zero.
So the state took hold of this drowning story and pushed back on it. Dr. G took the stand and said that in her 20 years of experience with dealing in accidental deaths, parents and families just don't act like the Anthonys. She said, quote, no matter how stiff the body, they always call 911 when it's an accident because there is still, in their minds, a chance. Of the 120 cases I've seen in the last few years, even when a mum's on crack cocaine, she calls 911.
And that makes sense. If it's an accident, I feel like you would think, there is a way, there is a way.
But if the jury was surprised by this new revelation from the defence, it was about to get even more crazy because Baez now needed to explain away all of Casey's lies. And this was the reason he came up with.
We are what we are because of who brought us into this world and how we were raised. Casey was raised to lie. This child, who at 8 years old, learned to lie immediately. She could be 13 years old, have her father's penis in her mouth, and then go to school and play with the other kids as if nothing ever happened. Nothing's wrong. That will help you understand why no one knew that her child was dead. That's the most important thing you must keep in the back of your mind, is that sex abuse does things to us. It changes you. Some people are fortunate to some people are fortunate to live with it. Others are not. And in this sad tragedy, it had to happen to Casey.
So, Jesus Christ doesn't quite cover it.
Yeah. It's so graphic.
Yeah. I mean, it's beyond graphic, and it's even worse because it's George. And Baez is not a man of half measures. He goes the full hog. It's like he picks a story that is so out there, it's too crazy not to be true. And Baez, the smarmy git that he is, unfortunately, is just one step ahead. He is just better than the prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, if you break down the way in which Baez tackles this case, it's really smart. He picks apart every single thing. How do I explain the fact that she didn't tell anybody? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's because she drowned in the pool and it was like a family secret. They covered it up. And how do I explain the lying? Because of the sexual abuse she's scared of her dad. Like, it all ties together.
Mm-hmm.
He paints a much better picture and tells a much better narrative, even for something that makes absolutely no fucking sense, than the prosecution did. And that's the way in which... Again, I don't want to be like, oh, yay, go Baez. But I'm like, he did it very well.
Yeah.
So the entire time Baez is talking about the abuse, incredibly graphically, like we said, Casey sat there crying. And George, oh my God, please, I'll leave links again. You go watch the court footage. George is sat in the courtroom with absolutely no expression on his face at all. Now he's blank face. Blank face George. And apparently, Baez had told George and Cindy just that morning that he was going to throw George under the bus in court. Apparently, Baez told him, this is according to George, you're going to have to fall on your sword for this. But George didn't play along. Or if it was true, if the sexual abuse was true, I don't personally think it is. Because there is, once again, no evidence whatsoever or any history of this or any accusations. And Cindy and George to this day are still together. And in interviews, they sit there holding hands. And I'm not saying mums don't enable abusive fathers or anything like that, but it's just none of it makes any sense. So yeah, George doesn't play along with it, or if it's true, he doesn't admit it. When he took the stand for the prosecution, he was asked, have you ever sexually molested your daughter, Casey Anthony? And again, he's asked this by the prosecution. He replies, no, sir, I'd never do anything like that. When he was asked, were you present in the home when Kaylee Anthony died? He replied, no. And when I heard that today, it hurt really bad. And the whole time, Casey just sits there as her dad is humiliated and mauled in court. It's unbelievable. And I know that's the prosecution, they're not trying to maul him, but it's emotionally mauling. And like I said, I don't believe the abuse story for a second. Byers and Casey would have, and did, say anything they had to.
When the defense questioned George, everyone was expecting them to hit him with the abuse claims and tear apart his denial, but Byers didn't even bring it up. Why? Because he had no evidence whatsoever. He just brought it up once to plant the idea in the jurors' minds. And then he never mentions it again because he knows a seed is enough.
He knows not to keep digging because then it's going to get pulled apart. And if people keep seeing George deny it, they might believe him. So don't bring it up again. Just leave it.
So when Byers had his turn with George at the stand, he took another, arguably even more malicious route. He brought up George's suicide attempt from January 2009. After Kaylee's body had been discovered, George found himself unable to cope. And one day he drove to a hotel in Daytona Beach, took 70 pills and drank as much beer as he physically could. He even left a note to his family that read, I miss Kaylee. I want to be with her. I love you, Cindy. But Kaylee, here I come. George was found and he was resuscitated. And he says in interviews that he just couldn't go on because when they found Kaylee, she'd been so close to home the entire time that he did blame himself. Every jail visit, Cindy tells Casey, your dad's been out all night looking for Kaylee. He didn't know where she was.
Yeah, because in all those jail visits, we hear Cindy and George coming in looking exhausted. And Cindy always says to Casey, your dad's been out all night, all day looking for him. And that's why George can't live with himself, because Kaylee was found so close to home and he was looking everywhere. Just don't believe for a second he knew she was there.
No, oh my God, no.
No. So when Byers brings up the incident of George's attempted suicide, he listens to George say that it was because he was sad. But Byers says to the jury, it wasn't because he was sad. It was because of the guilt. Again, that's all you need. That's all you need to just... Apparently, that's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when you're a piece of shit fucking murder defense lawyer, like... Byers is, you'll just go, that, I mean, he's done a clearly very good job, but he's got no shame.
No, that's why him and Casey are like the perfect match. So when Byers accuses George of having done it and having tried to kill himself because of the guilt, George breaks down on the stand. And it's honestly, I found it one of the most stomach-churning parts of this case to watch. And speaking of stomach-churning to watch, it's Cindy in the interviews after. Like I said, they're still together. When the interviewers in one of the documentaries I watched asked Cindy about this incident, about Byers bringing up George's suicide attempt, she just says it must have been one of the hardest things for him to go through. I feel like you've got to watch it in the context to understand how callous it sounds, because she makes it sound like an inevitability. She makes it sound like, well, that's just what he had to do. You know, I'd say the shit about the fucking chloroform. Like, it was just what he had to do. It's kind of the subtext I took away from it. Not instead being angry at the fact that Byers did it or the fact that Casey obviously went along with it because, yeah, she's not the one saying it, but she's there.
Yeah.
I just feel so, so sorry for George. And throughout the trial, Casey never takes a stand. She never, ever testifies, which I think, again, is another very smart move from Byers, because I think Casey had taken the stand, opened her mouth, the jury would have fucking hated her. And finally, after a painful trial, it was time for the closing arguments.
Judge Belvin Perry actually forbade the allegations of sexual abuse from being mentioned in the closing arguments, as the defense had shown absolutely no evidence for it on that grounds. I have no idea why it wasn't struck from the record, but it wasn't. But even if it had been struck from the record, the jury still heard it. Byers didn't even bring up the pool drowning theory in his closing remarks either, because again, he didn't have any evidence. And he actually says, we might never know how Kaylee died. After you literally proposed a theory of how she died, saying this is what happened.
Not even a theory. He says, Casey has admitted this is what happened. Casey has admitted to me that Kaylee drowned in the pool. It wasn't a theory. He was saying that is what categorically happened.
Yeah.
And then in his closing arguments, he says, we might never know what happened.
Honestly, this is filling me with joy for my jury duty that starts on Monday.
Oh, yeah, shit. That's it. We're actually, like, trying to take 2 weeks off after this. Hannah's got jury service.
Yeah.
Hopefully only 2 weeks.
Do you know what the real shitter? They've moved it from the Old Bailey.
Oh, no.
I think it's still an Old Bailey. So apparently they're called Nightingale Courts, where, like, so it's still in the city. It's still in the south. It's on, like, East Cheap or something. So it's a lower court, but it's an Old Bailey case because it's a COVID thing. They can't have too many people in the building. So I think it's still an Old Bailey case, but it's fucking a bit of a shitter. I can't even go in the Old Bailey.
Oh, that is a bit of a shitter. And also this just makes me sound like the work misogynist that I am, that I'm like, oh, East Cheap's actually really close to here. So if we need to come into work after, it's really easy. yeah, because we're not actually off.
No. So many moving cogs, so many levers being pulled by Crocs. So Baez doesn't directly say the pool theory in his closing statements, but he does hint at it by showing a picture of Kaylee opening the French doors at the back of the Anthony house, all on her own. And within this shot, you can see the pool in the background, just suggesting away, just reminding.
He's basically saying, look, proof, she can open the door on her own and go out into the pool.
Like subliminal advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Baez then told the jury to base their verdict on evidence, not on emotion, even though he has literally provided none. And he said all the state was doing was trying to slut-shame Casey. But they had no evidence for what happened, even though they presented loads of evidence.
Yeah. And this is the thing. In interviews with Baez, like, he goes on the Dr. Phil show, obviously. Sorry, the Phil McGraw show. Shade. And he, like, after he stops representing Casey and talks about the case, the thing that really infuriates me, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe you can correct me, the thing that irritates me is he constantly keeps saying, when Phil is like, you talked about, because Phil is very much like, he thinks George didn't sexually abuse Casey Anthony, like most people in the world are. And when he said, you know, you were saying that George had sexually abused Casey as a child, where was your evidence? Where was your evidence? Where was your evidence for this? And you said that Lee had sexually abused her. Where's the evidence? Baez keeps saying, as the defense, I don't have to prove anything. I just have to create beyond reasonable doubt. But my understanding is that's what you have to do with the overall charges of the case. Not that you can just say whatever fucking crazy shit you want with no evidence.
Yeah, it seems pretty unreasonable that the defense can just stand up and chat shit for days on end and no one can pull them up on it.
Because you don't have to prove anything. I feel like that's not what that means.
No, I also think that that's not what that means. I'm sure him and Phil McGraw get on really well.
Yeah.
Both fucking snake oil merchants.
I really feel like all that means is when the defense don't have to prove anything is like, they don't have to prove that Casey Anthony didn't kill Casey. They just have to create beyond reasonable doubt as to the prosecution's case. But you can't just say whatever shit you fucking want, like her dad sexually abused her, offer no evidence, and then say, well, I'm the defense. I don't have to prove anything. Like, what? Anyway, I thought that was like quite an interesting part of his defense about himself. So the state closed by saying that Casey had killed Kaylee because she'd wanted a new life, one with her 22-year-old club promoter boyfriend, Tony Lazzaro. They said that she wanted to have a life and be out there and be free, but she knew she'd either have to sacrifice herself or her child. And I think it's safe to say that after the trial, after the closing arguments, even despite Baez's performance, I think most people were expecting a guilty verdict. But when the jury returned, they unanimously found 25-year-old Casey Anthony not guilty of first-degree murder, of aggravated child abuse, or aggravated manslaughter. And honestly, from Casey herself to the judge, everyone in that courtroom looked shocked. The reporters look like they can't fucking believe it. It's unbelievable. After this, Casey was only convicted of providing law enforcement with false information, for which she was sentenced to a year in prison. But she was let off with time served and good behaviour, given she had spent about 3 years at this point in a county jail. And so she actually walked out of jail just 10 days after sentencing.
Everyone in the whole world was making that noise. People were furious. And they were as angry at the jurors as they were at Casey herself. There were protesters outside the courthouse with signs that read, jurors 1 to 12, guilty. guilty of murder. I don't want to go on Monday.
I mean, guys, like, fucking, I understand people's anger, but I'm like, again, you can't just start saying whatever you fucking want.
No.
You're not Jose Baez.
Jurors even got death threats. One guy said he got 1,000 emails a day from people raging at him. The members of the jury have said in interviews that most of them actually believe that she did do it, but they felt that the state just didn't have the evidence to back up how, when, and where Kaylee had died. But there are a few things that didn't come out at trial that we think are worth discussing.
Mm-hmm. Again, prosecution, if they had done their job better, instead of... I don't think they did a bad job in court. I do think that they were complacent in their case building. So firstly, fact that didn't come out, or not fact, thing that didn't come out at court, at trial. The drowning story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when that came out, it sounded awfully familiar to another young woman out there named April Whalen. April had been Casey's jailhouse neighbour, and in 2007, her 15-year-old son, Isaiah, had tragically drowned in their family pool. And April's father had been the one to find him. And April's like, I'm pretty definitely sure I told Casey Anthony about that when we basically lived together. Not enough? Okay, I've got more. On the 16th of June 2008, the day that Kaylee vanished, Casey had been on the Anthony's computer scrolling through Facebook for hours. She had looked through hundreds of pictures of her friends partying, and we know it was her because she also MSN chatted with her friends.
Those were the days.
Uh-huh.
Then she had Googled shot girl costumes. A few hours later, there was a more ominous search for suffocation, shortly followed by foolproof suffocation. And then Casey Anthony clicked on an article about suicide that had discussed taking poison and putting a bag over one's head. All these searches and internet activity were on a Firefox browser. Cindy and George are old, so they obviously always used Internet Explorer. So guess who used the younger, hipper, better version?
I'm guessing it wasn't Kaylee.
No, it was not. It was Casey. So when police analysts collected information from the family computer, they only vaguely looked for anything connected to chloroform on Internet Explorer. And they did that because they were so sure about what they had found in the car, they didn't think they would need anything else. And what's more, the state didn't ask for it either. But Baez knew about these searches. In fact, in an interview after he stopped representing Casey, he said that he thought the state were going to hit him hard with these in court, but they didn't, because they totally overlooked Firefox.
This is the thing. Baez fucking knew that she had done these searches, and the prosecution didn't. Yep. All right, time to get the pins out of the pincushion, because it's time to talk about Zenaida Gonzalez.
Okay.
So remember we told you last week to put a pin in that name, and we also told you to put a pin in the location of where Kaylee's body had been found, in the swamp woods. Well, now it's time to remove those pins. Remember that we said Kaylee's body had been found about a quarter of a mile from the Anthony's home. It was found in a wooded clearing between two houses. One house was number 4701, and 4709. Guess who lived in these two houses? The person who lived at 4701 was Zenaida Alaya, and the person who lived at 4709 on the other side of this gap was Peter Gonzalez.
It's like, I can't remember, there's a magician who has a trick for remembering a pack of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you visualize a walk that you do often, and you put the card in your mind on the gate of the house that you pass first. Mm. It's a memory technique. So it's the same walk, and then you just change the things that you like put on the hook.
Ah.
It's like she's done that.
Yeah. Just by pure instinct though.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think she's been doing brain training.
No.
I think she's just pulled this one out of her ass.
But it's, I don't know if it's got anything to do with it, but come on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. I know it's Florida. But
yes, it is
on.
Florida, but it is one fuck of a coincidence, even for the Sunshine State, my friend.
Jesus. Okay, so none of this matters. Despite how hot and heavy we're getting about it, it doesn't matter. Also, this is all very well known. I didn't like dig this out some super sleuthing. This is all very well known. There's like a million fucking AP articles about it. I'll leave links below. But none of this matters, in a legal sense at least. Because thanks to Double Jeopardy, Casey Anthony cannot be retried for the murder of Kaylee Anthony. She's free. And I do have to wonder, like, if they hadn't gone for first degree, but then she doesn't even get convicted of aggravated child murder.
I think
aggravated child, whatever it was, manslaughter. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Even the judge afterwards is like shocked.
I'm amazed that they didn't overturn the jury's verdict, because they can do that.
I don't know why the judge didn't, because he has gone on record and said that he thought that the state showed enough evidence for a conviction of one of the homicides, if not first degree for one of the homicides. I don't know why he didn't overturn it. I guess that goes some way to, like, maybe you don't want to do that all the time because, like, it undermines, and maybe with a high profile case like this, maybe it undermines confidence in the jury system. But it's not just us saying it. And it's not just you. It's a fucking high profile. Like, everybody knows this case, but
The whole thing seems completely unbelievable. And the defense were probably not as thorough as they should have been. But even still, there's no way you can watch the footage of Casey Anthony being interviewed and not think she's completely guilty. We will talk theories at the end, but we have a little bit to get through before we get to that stage. So let's talk about Casey's personality and what might have been going on with her mental health. Like we said, if you watch her being interviewed, she spends most of her time laughing and joking with the police officers. She's never furious like you might expect a parent who was innocent to be. I'd imagine I'd be pretty seething at the police for wasting my time talking to me rather than looking for my missing child and her abductor after 30 days. But Casey is very chill. She shows no emotion. She even presents very open body language. It's very believable. If you don't know the context, you'd be forgiven for thinking that she was being honest. But once you actually listen to what she's saying, you realise it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
So for a better understanding of, you know, what maybe personality disorder is going on with Casey or whatever it might be, we went to Dr. Grande on YouTube. I will leave a link to his video analysis below. And he makes the point that it's almost counterproductive for Casey to be so together. And Jim Can't Swim also says something very similar. Again, we'll leave a link below. If you were in this situation, you would expect somebody to actually be pretending to be upset, pretending to be frantic.
Yeah.
Why does she pretend, or why is she appearing like everything is fine? It's like it's a facade that she can't take off. It's like she can't stop pretending that everything is okay all of the time. It's like she can't change her behavior. And of course, a question becomes, what's going on with her then? Because whether you believe she did it or not, she never seems bothered by the disappearance of her child. Even if you think she didn't kill Kaylee, why isn't she fucking terrified then?
Mm-hmm. Why isn't she terrified of being labeled a literal child murderer and then going to prison? Being a cop isn't fun in prison, but being a child murderer in a women's prison is horrendous. It's the worst of the worst.
I bet. So whether you think she did it or not, her behavior doesn't match up to the circumstances that she's in, because she's got a missing and then a dead child.
Yeah, yeah.
So is she a psychopath? Is she a sociopath? What's going on? Interestingly. And again, we don't often kind of get this level of information. It's once again, thanks to Florida sunshine laws, that we have all of this information. Two mental health professionals assessed Casey using what's known as the MMPI, which is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. If you've read the book, you will read about us talking about Carla Homolka's MMPI in there. Basically, it is the gold standard for personality assessment. Both of these mental health practitioners who assessed Casey using this assessment tool found that she had normal results, which means that there was no evidence of any sort of mental or personality disorders. Which makes me want to scream, how?
In a way, that's more terrifying.
Yeah. I'm baffled. I'm absolutely baffled by this case. I will say MMPI is the gold standard, but as we saw with Carla Homolka in the book, it can churn out incorrect results if it's not done properly. These assessments were looked into by other experts and it was said that it was done properly. So like, I can't refute it.
I'm at a loss.
Yeah. So basically, these two mental health professionals found that Casey Anthony had no psychopathy, she had no sociopathy, and that she only had a normal level of narcissism for her age, which at 25 would have been 22 at the time. But, you know, they're assessing a person in their mid-20s. They're like, it's pretty normal, the level of narcissism she has. They also pointed out that Casey Anthony had nothing in her history which indicated that she would be likely to commit a violent crime like this. Which again, as we know, is a pretty strong indicator.
So where is Casey Anthony now? Well, after the trial, she moved in with one of her attorneys. And now it seems that she lives in Palm Beach with a guy called Patrick McKenna. He was the 73-year-old lead investigator for her defense. We actually talked about this in the news a few months ago. Apparently, Patrick McKenna is helping Casey with her photography business and becoming a PI. I'm sure that's all he's helping her with.
Yep. I'm sure she's not helping him out at all.
No, I'm sure she's not trading any favours for anything.
With his dick. I mean, it's despicable. When she gets interviewed about becoming a PI stuff, she's like, I'm just going to do what they did to me, but in a good way.
Show me the person who would hire Casey Anthony. Because what do PIs do? They find people and they watch people.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's the two things Casey she can't do.
In her first ever interview as a free woman, which she gave in 2017, this is what Casey had to say for herself.
I don't give a shit about what anybody thinks about me. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I never will. I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting. And there's a documentary where after she gives this interview, they play it to George and Cindy, where she's saying, I sleep okay at night. And George just looks heartbroken. He's like, we haven't slept in years.
And also, she compares her case for murdering her child. She compares it to the case of O.J. Simpson, even going so far as to say that she sees many parallels between the two cases. Which, Casey, maybe pick a case where the popular opinion of the globe isn't that they did it. Yeah. And their autobiography is called If I Did It. Like, try harder. Even Amanda Knox would be better than that.
Yeah. I don't know what she's thinking.
There's no way there's not something incredibly wrong with her. I'm sorry. I know.
I don't know what it is, though. Because the MMPI were like, nah, she's fine.
Maybe she's got some new fucking hybrid personality disorder that no one else has. She's got the Dennis Nilsons is what she's got.
She's got a touch of the Dennis Nilsons. So as for the Anthonys, what's going on with them? Well, George says now, thankfully, that he wants nothing to do with Casey anymore. He says he's done. Lee also has nothing to do with Casey. He has his own child and he's like, I don't want her anywhere near us. But Cindy seems a little bit weaker on it. In these interviews, I've watched so many, it's all just like blurred into one. And they're all from like quite a similar time period, like recent, like as in 2015 to 2017, 2018. Sometimes in the same breath, she'll say that she thinks Casey did it. And then she'll pause and be like, oh, I don't know. And I'm just like, ugh.
So as we reach the end of 2021, dragging ourselves into the new year.
Kicking and screaming.
Kicking and screaming. At least we can look forward to it not being fucking nighttime at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, what do we think, your loyal hosts? What have we decided? Well, probably we think that Casey gave Kaylee something like Xanax, which we know Casey had access to, and she probably used it to knock the little girl out for long stretches of time so she could do what she wanted.
And there is some corroboration for this. Again, it's not solid. We can't test Kaylee's toxicology, can't test anything to see. But people like Tony and his housemate and other people that were friends with her did say that Kaylee would just sleep for a really long time sometimes and wake up and still look really tired. She was fucking... I know sometimes we call her two and sometimes we call her three. It's like she's like 2¾.
Uh-huh.
You're just giving a child that young fucking Xanax. Again, it just speaks to the immaturity and irresponsibility of Casey Anthony.
So was this an accidental killing or was it a calculated murder? The duct tape seems to suggest that it was premeditated. Once Kaylee was dead, Casey moved her body into the boot of her car. And then we think, and this is just our opinion, so don't be afraid of a differing opinion, it won't bite you. We think that Casey then put Kaylee in the car and just tried to forget about it for a bit because she's incredibly immature. Mm-hmm. That was how she would have dealt with it. Then when Casey couldn't ignore the smell anymore, that's when she dumped Kaylee's body in the woods. And then she ditched the car after trying to clean the boot out and filling it with rubbish to try to mask the smell of her decomposing daughter.
And I think that, you know, how could she do all of this? How could she do all of this? Well, I think there's one thing that we have learned about Casey Anthony. She's very, very good at compartmentalizing and rationalizing her way out of situations. From her past, things like with the graduation, her pregnancy, the lies that she told police, like walking them around Universal Studios. We know that she's the kind of person to just ignore things as long as she humanly, possibly, physically can. And then she is like, oh, okay, fine. The whole crime is so immature as well. It really reflects Casey's personality and behavior, I think. And that is also the fact that Kaylee's body is dumped 1/4 of a mile from her own fucking front door is what makes me think no one else was involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just going back to the calls that we listened to at the start, the jail visits where the parents are like, you don't need to protect anybody. You don't need to protect me. You don't need to protect your dad. You don't need to protect... Just tell the truth. Why would the parents say that if Kaylee had drowned in the fucking pool and they'd all covered it up? And you think Casey's the kind of person that would be protecting her dad in prison after what she watched happen to him in court? I don't know. Did she do it on purpose? Did she not? I don't know. I think the duct tape, if we believe that the duct tape was on the face, then I think it was on purpose. Because why is there duct tape on a child's face?
Yeah.
If we believe Werner Spitz and the idea that there's no proof or that the duct tape wasn't attached to the face and the mandible and the teeth isn't good enough evidence and it just maybe was part of the rubbish of the scene, then I could believe that it was an accident.
Yeah.
And that Casey basically kills Kaylee and then just tries to get on with it. I think a problem for the prosecution in court, a reason that they didn't win, they blame the jury, not in the sense of like, oh, this jury was stupid. They blame the jury for being like, well, we could only pick the people who didn't confess to the fact when they were being vetted for the jury that they had already made up their minds.
Mm-hmm.
So because of Florida sunshine laws, they'd already seen all the evidence that was there. So if they still weren't convinced of her guilt, there was nothing we could say to convince them. But as a cop-out, man.
Yeah, it is your job.
And also most people out there thought she was fucking guilty as fuck. Right.
Yeah, you had a pretty easy run of it, actually.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think that's good enough, really. I don't know. I think the problem for the prosecution was that they repeatedly tried to say, and this is interesting because the prosecution don't have to prove a motive. They don't have to prove a motive. But I feel like they repeatedly tried to say that Casey had wanted to be free and that the reason she killed Kaylee was that reason. I think they didn't paint a good enough picture of the situation, like, you know, like Baez did. And I think the problem with them trying to point to this as the motive was that Baez and the defense were quite easily able, pointing at Cindy and George, her loyal parents who were in court every day, to say that motherhood wasn't really that hard for Casey. She had a place to live. She had parents look after her. Their parents would even have taken Kaylee away from her and happily raised her as their own, which I think is true.
Yes, I agree.
So then it became hard, I think, for people to believe that Casey's only way out of this situation where she was trapped with a child was to kill this child. And I think that was maybe the downfall. I don't know. I think there's also something interesting to be said in why then did, if we say that she did it on purpose, if we say it wasn't an accident, she did it on purpose, why then did Casey Anthony kill Kaylee? Because like I said, Cindy would have taken that child. Part of me does wonder, given the relationship between that mother and daughter, whether Casey Anthony didn't do it in some way to punish Cindy and to decouple herself from her mum. You have a baby with somebody, and no, it's not Cindy's baby, you're tied to that person forever.
Oh, yeah.
And the way in which Cindy overreaches her responsibility as a grandmother, I'm not blaming her, I just think Casey clearly was very irresponsible. I think it was a way for Casey to punish her and also to find a way to try and cut that tie a bit. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I also think she's, you know, immature enough to have seen it in that light and been like, I've got a problem. How do I get rid of it?
I'll never be free as long as Kaylee is here because you'll always be on my back.
Yeah.
But that is assuming she did it on purpose. I don't know. But whatever happened, the way in which she deals with it after is absolutely fucking bonkers.
Do you think?
Mm.
Here's my theory.
Oh, hit
about
me.
Zanny the nanny.
Oh.
So Xanax is referred to by the kids on the street.
Zanny.
As Zanny. So could it be that Casey would make a little joke about it? Because she didn't have a real in-life person nanny, but she did have a pharmaceutical nanny.
Oh, absolutely.
So she probably called it Zanny the nanny.
She's gone off to Zanny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do think that that is a very, very likely possibility.
Yes, I agree.
That is also... Again, this is one of those cases where I feel like, how much do we have to add to it? A lot of this is out there already. It's a case that is very old. It's very well covered.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that you guys have requested. And I'll be honest, I have... Is enjoyed the right word? I have... I found it very interesting to dig into.
And you probably feel like you've liberated yourself from the chains that have been holding you down for years.
All of the years
that people have been asking for this.
Absolutely. It was a beast. It was a beast of a case. But there you go, guys. That is the mammoth story of Casey Anthony and Kaylee Anthony. I think, again, like Kaylee gets quite lost in this case. There's loads of pictures and videos, and she is a fucking adorable little kid, actually. I'll give her that. I'll give you that, Kaylee. And it's just heartbreaking. She'd be 16 years old now if she was alive. Yep.
So on that big fat bummer.
Yep.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And happy a happy new year. Goodwill to all men. Joy to the world. The Lord is come. I was just reeling them off. Silent night, holy night. Round yon virgin mother and child. Have an amazing Christmas, guys. It's been a tough year and an amazing year at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you've been there for us every step of the way. And we couldn't be more grateful. So make sure you look after yourselves this Christmas. Have a wicked new year. And we'll see you in 2022.
Yeah, bloody hell. Stay safe. And hopefully next year we'll bring more positive things. We'll see you then.
Goodbye.
Bye.